Welcome to the Look Far podcast, Voices from the Wild. Join Look Far Conservation as we talk to conservation leaders from around the world about their work, their life, the challenges they face, and the successes they've had.
Eventually, you know, any conservation project, you know, you have to think that at some point there's going to be a handoff of these conservation goals to a community. That should be our main goal. Eventually, we're just gonna pass this on to the people that live there. If you can do that, then you've done your job. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, if you have to have a constant presence all the time, saying things, there's something you're not doing.
Carlos was talking about their introduction. We had meetings with some people. He said, no, my farm was the first one that received the Gold Lion Tamarin for reintroduction. The other said, no, mine was the first one. So there is a kind of engagement that's so nice and so important.
Welcome to the Look Far podcast. Today we talk to our friends from the Association of the Golden Lion Tamarin, which goes by its Portuguese language acronym of AMLD, Luis Paulo Ferraz, AMLD's executive director, and Carlos Ruiz, AMLD's board chair, talk with Marlies Carino and me about AMLD's work to protect the last surviving fragments of the Atlantic forest in Brazil. Living there is the Golden Lion Tamarin, a highly endangered little monkey found only in this corner of the São João watershed, within 2 hours' drive of Rio de Janeiro. By the 1980s, the Golden Lion Tamarin had lost more than 95% of its original habitat, and barely 200 monkeys survived in the wild. Thanks to AMLD and its more than 30 years of work, the Golden Lion Tamarin population has now recovered to more than 3,000, but significant threats remain, and AMLD's work is far from complete. We'll learn from Luis Paulo and Carlos how protecting the Golden Lion Tamarin is very much a community effort and has sparked an inspiring new conservation ethic in this part of Brazil. All that and more in an episode recorded live from the Atlantic Forest coming up.
The organization we're here in Brazil visiting is the Association of the Golden Lion Tamarin, which is only how you'd call it in English. Luis Paulo, the proper name is?
Associação Mico-Leão Dourado.
There you go. And it has a remarkable history because on the one hand, it's very focused on the Golden Lion Tamarin. On the other hand, that's been a way to do some really first-rate conservation work here in the Atlantic Forest, in one of the most biodiverse ecosystems in the world, and also one of the most threatened. It's an area where we're barely 2 hours outside of Rio, too. So we're very close to major centers of population. And yet there's biodiversity here that rivals, if not exceeds, that of the Amazon itself. Isn't that right, Carlos?
Yeah, the degree of endemism in the Atlantic Forest, it's very high, higher than in the Amazon. And this region where we are, the San Juan River watershed, it really has a high biodiversity, a lot of endangered species, especially birds. This is a birders' paradise also here, with lots of endemic endangered species here. And one of the few areas where you still have howler monkeys in the lowlands of the state of Rio. Well, the mountain lion, and then you have the margays and ocelots in here. Also, we see them in our camera traps all the time. Even in these private properties, you know, in these farms you have in the forest, and there's lots of biodiversity.
And so we're sitting now in the headquarters. You're on almost 300 hectares, which you've reforested, connecting more than 10,000 hectares. And across the road, you did something remarkable, which was you took advantage of an obscure law that said when forest is on both sides of the highway, the company that built the highway has to create an eco bridge or an eco duct for animals and things to cross. You're coming up on 30 years of operation. So take us back and kind of tell us, how did we get here?
Well, the story of the conservation history of the Golden Lion Tamarin is very much linked to the biological reserve that we have right in front of us called Poço das Antas. And this road called BR-101, it crossed the landscape of the Golden Lion Tamarin. The only area where the Golden Lion Tamarin lives is the Atlantic Forest, the lowland Atlantic Forest in the interior of Rio de Janeiro State. And a small remnant that we still have is here in this region. Well, 70% of the Brazilian population lives in the Atlantic forest. So this road is very important. It was needed to build the second lane of this road. We knew that. We were never against the development. But building the second lane would create a barrier for the biodiversity, especially for the Godelana tamarin. Important people to know that the tamarins, they don't like to walk, to use the pastures to movement from one side to the other. So if you have, they need to have trees. They need to feel protected in the middle of the forest, or even some lines of trees will help them to move because they are afraid of the predators and they don't move in pastures, in open areas. Especially building the second lane in that biological reserve would isolate the reserve from the rest of the landscape. And we could say that we would lose that population because we need to create a landscape, a conservation landscape that allows the animals to move in the forest from one side to the other. Fragmentation is a big issue here. And to build different passages for the animals, to have a wildlife bridge, that was a dream, something that never happened in Brazil. It's common in other countries, but in Brazil was the first.
This is a central tenet of conservation biology. This idea that fragmentation of habitat, creating islands, is very bad for biodiversity. Forests, the species that live there, you know, animals, plants, bugs, they all can start to die off and die back if there's not a contiguous habitat over a sufficiently large area. And that's been a huge problem in the Atlantic forest, where it's not so much rampant deforestation, although that still occurs, but it's that development fragments existing pockets of surviving forest to a degree where it becomes unsustainable. I mean, is it, Carlos, am I butchering this
scientific concept? Exactly that. And sometimes the solutions are simple. So I just connect the forest. You know, and for example, if you look at our conservation goals, we need 2,000 monkeys in 25,000 hectares of connected and protected forest. It sounds pretty simple. But to do that, you need everybody that lives in this region to buy into that plan. You can't connect forest without landowners agreeing to connect forests. You need people. I mean, that's a huge undertaking. I mean, just each word, you know, getting 2,000 monkeys. So we worked on the getting 2,000 monkeys. It was a big reintroduction project, for example, to get a bunch of monkeys here in private properties. And, you know, 25,000 hectares where you can map and find the 25,000 hectares. We have the forest. But connected and protected, you can't do that without people.
Yeah, and actually on the monkeys, I mean, this was sort of an early rewilding effort. Rewilding now is so, you know, it's such a vogue term. There's so much great rewilding work happening.
But just imagine that this project started the reintroduction before you had these international guidelines for reintroduction. The association has been going on for 30 years, but the conservation project, you add 10 more years because it was for 10 years, it was at Smithsonian and a National Zoological Park project. And the Pozo das Santas Biological Reserve was created for the Golden Lion Tamarin, and it was the first biological reserve of the country.
74.
So at the beginning of the project, nobody knew how to do reintroduction of monkeys. Mm-hmm. They started experimenting. And interesting, since I talked about people before, except for the first release of the animals, which was in the biological protected reserve for practice, all of the other reintroduction was done in private properties with landowners. And what I hear from the people at the beginning is that after a couple of landowners said, yeah, bring the tamarins here, then you had lines of waiting. People wanted the golden lion tamarins in their farms. And this quickly became, it's like, this is a place to work because this is a community of people that want to do conservation.
And what I'm really struck by is how, while there's some brilliant people that work for AMLD, there's a community outside of that. It really is an association of people who don't work here full time, who are real partners of yours.
Yes, well, the Godelana Tamarin is a very good communication actor, we can say that. So people love monkeys, orange monkey that is so cute and so friendly, and it's much easier to talk about conservation having this beautiful animal with us, of course. But it is a mix of, yes, we have a plan to save the species from extinction, but at the same time, we are working for, when you plant forests for the golden lions, how many we are planting forests for all the biodiversity of all the animals of the Atlantic forest, and to produce water for the people, to produce, to create new better conditions for everyone. So it's a conservation initiative. Carlos was talking about the reintroduction. We had meetings with some people who say, no, my farm was the first one that received the golden lion tamarin for reintroduction. The other said, no, mine was the first one. So there is a kind of engagement that's so nice and so important. To give you an idea, in Silva Jardim municipality, is one of the municipalities in Brazil with the higher number of private protected areas, because the landowners would like to be part of this initiative. So this is something that do not provide money or status or whatever, but for him it's important to be part of the initiative.
Yeah, and so private, this is the RPPN,
yes,
right? And so what does that stand for?
That is a protected area that is recognized by law officially, and it's an initiative by the landowner, a voluntary initiative to protect the environment, to protect the part of his property. He can develop activities related to education, conservation, ecotourism, etc. They can bring benefits for the property. But some of them just create the reserve, private reserve, and said, no, I don't want to touch this reserve. In case he sells the property, the next owner cannot cut the forest, next generation as well. But so it's now something protected for life. And that is a huge thing in terms of personal initiative with their property.
It's like an easement, but it seems like it's another level beyond that.
Yeah.
But again, like what I'm impressed by is, say, powerful, persuasive little monkey to draw so many people into applying for and setting up these RPPNs and permanently setting aside parts of their own land in order to create habitat, which the tamarin benefits from, but so do lots of other species.
You know, yes, it works to create empathy, but we've discovered that in this region, we have a lot of people that want to keep a particular lifestyle that involves green areas and conservation and clean water, and they associate it with health. So these people wanted to have nature. So we've learned too that, yes, the monkey helps a lot. I mean, and they love the monkey, but these people already wanted to have a green region, and that has helped us a lot.
It's also not just appreciating nature. I understand that a lot of people, the whole coast here, north of Rio, is relying on this watershed for
yes, it's the only source of water for the major tourist beaches north of the city of Rio. International tourism. I mean, these regions of Búzios, Cabo Frio. I mean, this is a place where the Rolling Stones come, you know, that kind of thing.
So a couple million people,
you know,
up there?
Yeah. Yeah, it's about 3 or 4 million people during summer. And the only source of water, it's the San Juan River, which it cuts right through the area of the Golden Lion Tamarin. So yes, what we do for the Golden Lion Tamarin, we're doing for water also.
You can do strategic land purchase. You can make corridors and connect areas, but not across the entire scale. The rest has to come from private landowners. It has to come from the community. But at the center of that, though, there needs to be some sort of focal point, some sort of place for information, for resources, for ideas, for energy. And that's AMLD. That's the role that you're playing in the community.
Something that can touch the heart of the people, that can make people think about, oh my God, we need to protect this forest. We need to keep these animals. We need the forest. Now we have the conditions here to provide people the experience of learning something about the importance of the forest, the importance of the biodiversity, of the animals, how the infrastructure can affect the protection of the biodiversity, and how it's connected to us. It's not something for the biologists. It's for you, it's for your daughter, it's for everyone. So we want to invite people, and I would like to use the opportunity of being talking to this great podcast to say, listen, we are in a process to open this area as a park for people to come, experience the moments of being in the forest, understand how to restore the forests. We have restored here 90 hectares of forest. So how to do it so biodiverse and complex ecosystem as the Atlantic Forest is? We want to talk to people, to normal people about that. It's so important, and necessary, especially at this moment of our life. The world is so complicated, the conflicts that you have, but we have to call people to return to this connection with nature, with the forest, with the environment, because the moment is very fragile for all of us now.
So we're staying in the Fazenda dos Cordeiros, which is, that alone is a reason to visit.
Mm-hmm.
He's a farmer. He grows his coffee. They make their bread. You make pizza. They have the best pizza. You have your organic farm, and then you open up your house to receive guests to let them enjoy the perks of nature. And that's his way of doing conservation and business and nature, a combination of business mm-hmm. and nature.
That is an interesting initiative because it was a traditional family farm, and the father, the family had the six kids, and the youngest one, called Ana Beatriz, she one day decided not to live in the big cities anymore and would like to be more connected to nature, and she decided to move with her husband to the property. It was a family property. They would come for weekends, and she decided to come and live here, and more than that, she decided that experience of living in a rural area had to be shared with others. And she became absolutely engaged in making that kind of rural tourism something real, and got involved with us as well very closely. So she became a kind of ambassador of the Coastal Alliance Tamarind, because on her property, she turned it into a very nice family guest house with fantastic experience in terms of food. They are very good cooks, using the products of the farm to offer to the visitors.
All organic products.
All organic products. And so she started getting involved with different initiatives, sustainable initiatives, with her husband Ayrton and her mother. And became a kind of special partner of the Coastal Alliance Tamarind Association. But unfortunately, Ana Beatriz, last year, she left us in this COVID crisis, connected to a cancer as well. But the project continues. Her husband and her mother decided, well, this cannot stop. We are going to keep it. And they are doing a great job right now. They are restoring forests in the farm now, right now with us. 5 hectares of forest that we are planting there. They keep the ecotourism, environmental education, receiving schools, and it's a fantastic and very special family initiative, if you can say that.
And we are we also serve as a multiplayer. You were talking about Ayrton now, for example. In addition to all of that he does, he holds meetings of other landowners, and they talk about they even created a movement of the sustainable Silva Jardim.
Yeah.
This is not something that we told them to do. This is something that after they clicked that there were these opportunities, they started to look for, and they're now their own conservation agents. And eventually, any conservation project, you have to think that at some point there's going to be a handoff of these conservation goals to a community. That should be our main goal. Eventually, we're just going to pass this on to the people that live there. If you can do that, then you've done your job. Otherwise, if you have to have a constant presence all the time saying things, there's something you're not doing.
Yeah. And in fact, I really feel like here, you can see how this notion of conservation has evolved. You go back to the 1980s, you know, like you were talking about earlier, Carlos.
Mm-hmm.
The Smithsonian, it's a, you know, focus on a single species. And it's all about, you know, reintroduction and then, you know, creating reserves to a reserve to protect it. And what we're now talking about is something that's as much about the community and about social entrepreneurship and about creating economic opportunities that are far more lucrative than running cattle and just seeing the returns diminish, you know, in year after successive year. Instead, something much more vibrant. And to do it at a scale and to do it outside of Rio and in Rio de Janeiro state, what an example that could serve for the rest of the world. And
it's a real solution.
Right? Yeah.
Because what we spoke about earlier, the problem is not so much the deforestation. That's been done in the past and now it's sort of stopped and it's forbidden and nobody's actually doing it. It's the abandoned pastures.
Yeah, there are small properties. And Brazil actually does very well with this idea of the small farmers, small properties, because there are a lot of them here. And you have to be diverse in your sources of income, but you also have to be part of like a network of community, produce things that are then going to be sold in the bigger markets. There's a certain, what they call it here the vocation of the land. So you have regions, for example, and then if everybody gets together and said, okay, this region is going to be known for heart of palm. Mm-hmm. So then that becomes like a thematic thing, you know, heart of palm and clean water. You know, so those are themes. See, the solutions have to come from the people that live here. You can come from the outside and drop in ideas, but eventually they have to come up and decide, you know, this is what works here. This is what we want to do. And actually, it's what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And the nurseries, Reguay even gets their seedlings here. Mm-hmm. Excellent at doing a restoration,
yes,
as well.
Yeah.
They use all your seedlings.
Hey, give you an example, the seedlings. Doing seedlings, selling seedlings from trees from the region, okay? That was, it cuts down your forest time in about, you know, three times. Before, if you bring seeds from other parts of the same species,
mm-hmm.
it will take you 10 to 12 years to have a standing forest. When you do it with the locally, from local seeds, it takes you 3 to 4 years to get a 7-8 meter. I mean, so it's just really fast. And Gregor was one place that saw that in the flesh. You know,
yeah,
the first reforestations took them a long time. The second round, they used the local seedling. There you have it.
So it was in 2016, we came to visit. Went to visit this sort of smallholder farmer, having stood up a tree nursery business. And I think if I remember right, her husband had been selling like cheese that he made from like a few goats. The equivalent of like $4,000 a year.
What an amazing memory you have.
Well, this was easy to remember because it was such a like, you know, visceral thing. And then she just was walking, you know, went out into the stand of forest that still stood, gathered seeds, relied on knowledge. And then I think she was generating something like $15,000 from the business, you know, tripling what the cheese sales were doing.
Yeah.
That was really neat to see.
So it's something that's easy to communicate. We can produce your own products in the forest, in your agriculture, but why not to keep some trees? Why not to do that in a different way? A farm like that help us to show that, yes, it's possible. Look, we did that. You can do it in your farm as well.
Yeah.
And so they are so connected to other neighbors, to the other people who live here, other landowners, that working with them help us to influence more people, to engage more people in the same idea of, yes, we can have agriculture, but we need to keep some forests. We need to keep some more trees. So let's do it together.
I think you've proven your resilience as well. Yesterday we met the team here. Most of them have been here for a long time. I mean, several have been here over 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good sign.
It's only possible to have good results because it's a long-term initiative. We are here talking about 40 years. So creating a relationship with people of confidence, of they know us, they know the institutions that work in here for conservation, the neighbors that are working with conservation, but not without conflicts, without difficulties. It's not it's not a paradise here. Imagine that you are a landowner and someone knock the fence of your property saying, I want to talk with you about golden lantern or about the conservation or protecting forest. And you just look and say, okay, or not, who are you? What are you doing? What are your intentions? But think about someone that lives in the region, they know someone who is your neighbor or know your family, and it's completely different, the dialogue, the possibility of exchanging ideas with someone that belongs to the community, is part of the of your life, and the logo of an institution that you saw so many times 10 years ago, 5 years ago, make things easier if I want to do something that will interfere directly in your mm-hmm. property, in your life, in your activities, or
mm-hmm.
in your agriculture. It cannot be only theoretically. We have to create confidence. It takes time, funds, money, people.
And we've been very, very careful over the years that of becoming that, like the trusted messenger. I don't think the association has never sided with anything negative that people can say, you know, that this bad thing, this other thing. I mean, we've always been there for everybody. And we've done things even that have nothing to do with conservation to maintain this network. When the rural settlements were made around here, these people knew nothing about agriculture. So we were there telling them, hey, why don't you do this and that, you know, and to make money. And this was, we took a, it had nothing to do with tamarinds. It was our part of saying, you know, you maintain a conservation network through long-term relationships. We're doing habitat conservation in a place where people live and work. So you have to include the people, and you're doing the habitat for the monkeys, and you're doing the habitat for people too. So we think, I mean, you could see this as a model. I mean, the things that we're doing here are gonna have to be replicated, or other people have to come up with their different solutions to do this.
Carlos, you're the chairman of the board, but you're also a professor at the university.
Yes.
Which I think is also typical for AMLD, the scientific element. You have a research lab, the yellow fever.
Mm-hmm.
You came up with the vaccine here in this lab, which is quite remarkable. So it's a serious research and science pillar that you also developed over the years.
This was a project that was started by scientists, and the goals are science-driven, and you use science to develop, you know, what you need to do, what you need to achieve. Yeah, for conservation, there's a lot of science behind it. Even our reforestation, you know, say, our reforestation, we need to plant trees. And it sounds so simple,
mm-hmm.
but you have like, you know, 20 different kinds of soils here in situation. You have things that were swamps before you. There are bromeliads and all your epiphytes. I mean, doing reforestation using those things that then for the forest. Plus the tamarinds, you know, how many tamarinds you need in how much area. There are genetics, there's behavior, there's ecology. How many tamarinds do we need to vaccinate, for example? There's a lot of science behind that. But in order for you to get that done, you need to do all of these things we're talking about. And because you, at some point, you have to implement these things.
Yeah.
At the beginning, in the early 70s, early 80s, the estimate was something like 200 animals, golden lion tamarinds, in the wild only. In 2014, our census showed us that we had 3,700 animals in the wild here in the region. So all that was result of years and years of reintroduction and all the monitoring that was done, etc., etc. But in 2017, we had this crisis related to the yellow fever, something that never happened before, something that was new for us, and immediately we had to think about something to do, trying to stop this process, or at least to reduce the impact of the disease on the population. So in 2019, we did another evaluation estimating that we lost in 2 years, 32% of the population.
Mm.
So for the first time in all this conservation effort, we lost 32%.
It's like 1,000 monkeys.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So now we are talking about 2,500 in the wild. And the connection between all the scientists, Carlos involved, we have one of our board members who is a scientist that work in the most important vaccine institution in Brazil called Fiocruz, Marcos. He is a landowner here, he's a member of our board and also a scientist specialized in yellow fever. He said, well, let's talk and let's try to do something. So, and then he started a process involving other national institutions, the ICMBio, the Primatology Center in Rio de Janeiro, and then the vaccine was tested and approved. And we are now, we have already 200 animals vaccinated, and we are doing that every day. just to show to everyone who is listening to us how fragile is an initiative like that. In 2 years, we lost 32% of the population. We could lose all the population in 5 years or in a short period of time. So even doing everything that we have been doing, sometimes something different can happen and you have to change all our strategies and move into a different focus. So that's what happened. Thanks God we had all this structure here, laboratory, all the conditions to do that. Great partners who helped us to finance the initiative. And now we are going to evaluate the impact of all this initiative. Carlos is one of the coordinators of all this process of vaccinations. And I don't know if you want to add something.
No, yes, it shows, I mean, the whole idea of how to respond to a crisis like this. You need a group of people that, you know, you can have a strategy to respond. What is it that we're going to do? So vaccination was decided to do, but for a population to be resilient, you know, what we're building here of interconnecting the forests is another solution to the problem of the yellow fever. Because yellow fever, we didn't lose 32% across the board. We really got two of our populations hit very hard and the whole regions where nobody died. And then you have the question, why is that? Then you have to bring science in, because the response to that, it's going to help us on what is that we're going to do.
Well, and I remember, I mean, the nimbleness with which you responded, and you're not an organization that just has extra people and resources sitting around waiting to do stuff. You're pretty busy. And the Fazenda Iguape project, which I want to talk about next, was really in the middle of it going on. Then this yellow fever crisis hits. And I remember, you know, Luis Paulo, I mean, no one could have a conversation with you about any topic without you bringing it to yellow fever. I mean, you were really focused and really driving it. And it could have been truly catastrophic had, you know, AMLD not, you know, been so, been so on the ball in its response. Before we wind down, I'd love to get back to how your headquarters and how this project came about, because I think it's a cool story. And I'll just offer my part, and then I'd love to hear, you know, the rest from you. You came to visit in 2016. Mark Huislag from IUCN Netherlands and Stuart Pim invited us, which was very kind of them. We got to visit you in your old headquarters, which you didn't own. You weren't squatting, but it sort of seemed that way a little bit. And got to see the tamarinds. And then you took us to see this farm, this abandoned farm that was almost 300 hectares. I think it had about 150 hectares that were pasture.
Actually, it's 237.
237.
100 to be restored of pastures and 137 of forests.
Yeah. So not a huge property, but expensive because we're close to Rio, you're close to the road. The price per hectare was comparatively high for the size of the land. You said, you're like, yeah, but you connect everything and you're connecting an area over 10,000 hectares. You know, strategic doesn't do it justice. And that was even before, and then also the eco-duct and what that means.
Yeah, what happened was exactly during the period of negotiations about the eco-duct that was confirmed that the licensing was in a good direction and the wildlife bridge was supposed to be exactly here. And we saw that this property here was on sale. And we got mad looking at the maps and saying, wow, after creating the connection, in this side of the road here, we still have a huge pasture that we are going to have good results of the wildlife passage. Because we have a challenge with us, Scott. All the road companies in Brazil, they don't want to have all this kind of huge investment to do for the animals. They cannot understand, well, they can understand, but they don't want to change much the direction of their business. Anyway, it was a conflict. And when you saw that area of huge pastures in the other side of the road, you said, no, we have to do something. And then we start all these negotiations involving saving nature, and then came DOB Ecology, and we started talking with our partner in the US, Save the Gold Lion Tamarind, and you came here and helped us to think, and we decided that yes, it could be a good idea to purchase this land. When we did that, I can say you that the Gold Line Tamarind Association not only had the opportunity to have our own office. First, during all this almost 30 years, our office was inside the biological reserve, but it was not our place. And because of the biological reserve, some activities could never happen there, mm-hmm. especially ecotourism. Now, it's a protected area that not allowed the ecotourism.
Mm-hmm.
But now, moving to this place, we renovated the infrastructure that we had here in this farm. Now we have excellent conditions to work in terms of our office, our infrastructure. We have much better conditions to invite people to come and to share the experience. And that's what we are going to do, calling this farm now not more as Fazenda Igarapé, Igarapé Farm, but the Golden Lion Tamarind Ecological Park.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the idea. In 1 or 2 months, we are going to open our gate. Not open the gates because you need to book in advance, but we are going to open our place to receive the guests
yeah.
and to share our experience. And it has changed completely the approach that the association can have now with the people. That's very important.
Yeah.
It's a funny story here. It's just the whole thing with the highway company. You know, the highway company never thought we would be able to pull this off. Because they see us as a small puny NGO that, you know, they're going to go away soon. So when they were deciding where to put this wildlife bridge, it was a fight of where exactly it will go. And finally, the Chico Mendes Institute said, well, here, it doesn't connect directly to the Pozo das Antas Biological Reserve. It's next to it. And when they said, okay, next to it, then the highway company said, well, but that connects nothing to nothing. It's a pasture from a private property to a pasture in the farm of a private property. Those people are never going to agree, na na na. So next round of meetings said, well, we got permission to do a corridor over here.
Uh-huh.
And then the next meeting we said, hey, we bought the other side, you know? So yes, now it connects our land to our land. We have corridors and we have everything you need. So and you just have their faces. I mean, they just couldn't believe it that we have solved the problem within 6 months. Or,
yeah, David and Goliath.
Yeah, yeah. It was a little bit of that.
Yeah. I should have mentioned too, DOB Ecology funded the purchase and all the conservation work here. And the idea that this would give the Association of the Golden Lion Tamarind a place for the community to rally around and engage in all manner of activities, meetings and programs and conferences and parties and whatever that could help, you know, overcome barriers to additional change and continue to kind of, you know, convert the region into a more sustainable one. So we saw the tamarinds this morning, and I think we're going to maybe see a tree nursery at some point. But then I think maybe most important is there's a lot of work still to do. There's a few other strategic land purchases in the offing, I think we're going to go and see, and I'm excited to do it because this particular project with Igarapé and turning it into, you know, connecting all those hectares, facilitating the land, the eco bridge, and everything, is I think the most rewarding thing that I've worked on, and it's remarkable the before and after, you know, just with my own eyes, just being able to remember from 6 years ago to now, it's just incredibly exhilarating. So I think enough podcast. Let's go get to work.
Okay, Scott. Thank you, Scott. Everything could not be done without great partners that we have. And it's wonderful to have you here. You too, Marlies. So let's go to work. And we have a lot to see and a lot to plan and to dream.
LookFar is a US 501c3 non-profit organization dedicated to defending wild and wondrous places and working with the people living in and among them. More at lookfar.org.